Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Today, Putnam manages money for more than 9 million individual and institutional investors worldwide. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
We give thanks today that we can take a quiet moment of reflection. That's why financial markets here at home were taking their usual break. It was supposed to be business as usual elsewhere today, but the stock market in Mumbai was forced to remain closed, and it was unclear when trading might resume as attackers laid siege to India's financial epicenter. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Clarkson Potter, publishers of The Splendid Tables, How to Eat Supper, a holiday gift idea for people who love to eat. Now available at splendidtable.org. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Calvert.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon in for Kai Ryssdal on this Thanksgiving Day, 2008. Thanks for making us a part of your holiday. Unfortunately, global terrorism knows no holiday, and today's top story around the world remains the terrorist siege in Mumbai, or Bombay as it used to be known, the business capital of India. Fighting continued today with attackers who took hostages in various locations around the city. The country's prime minister has promised to track down those responsible for targeting seven different sites in the city yesterday with devastating effect. At least 119 people have died and close to 300 have been injured. These attacks were unleashed just as India was struggling to contain the fallout from the global financial crisis. And as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports from London, the terrorists seemed intent on not only causing death and destruction, but also inflicting harm on the Indian economy.
The attacks have already had financial repercussions. The government shut India's main financial markets today. With grenades exploding in the heart of Mumbai's commercial district, all business there ground to a halt. Jake Betts is a British commercial lawyer based in the city. He spent today holed up in his apartment.
For expats like me, at the moment, people doing business here, these locations are just where we go every day. So we feel very targeted and wonder quite how we're going to live our a normal life in the coming weeks now.
The gunmen attacked hotels and restaurants used by Westerners. They were reportedly trying to single out people with American or British passports. Gerard Walsh is with the Economist Intelligence Unit in London. He says Mumbai is the obvious target for anti-Western terrorists who also want to damage the Indian economy.
It's the home of a lot of foreign headquarters based in India, so it is critically important to the commercial well-being of the country as a whole.
This year, foreign companies, including IBM and Microsoft, ploughed more than $40 billion into India. Further foreign direct investment could now be in jeopardy, says Walsh.
Especially when you also consider the global economic slowdown.
But India is no stranger to terrorism. This year, 800 people have been killed in attacks around the country. 200 died in Mumbai 2 years ago. Sharon Bamford of the UK India Business Council.
Bombay has gone through this before and Bombay will bounce back. India is resilient.
But if this latest attack turns out to be the start of a campaign, the resilience of foreign investors will be tested to the full. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
On to more mundane business, if that's really the word for what's happening to retail sales. Frankly, retailers will be thankful if you just spend some money with them today. Sure, the sales extravaganza known as Black Friday is officially hours away, but many stores have already posted their discounts online today. And in some places around the country, shoppers are already standing in line to be the first in the doors tomorrow morning. That being the case, we asked our Amy Scott why the holiday sales outlook remains dismal.
If you've watched any television lately, you know how desperate retailers are for your cash.
Get hundreds of doorbusters, 4 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Get our lowest prices ever at the
biggest shopping event of the year.
Dan de Grandpre tracks retail bargains at dealnews.com. He says this year the promotions started early.
We saw the first Black Friday sale in October. When you have the kind of environment that retailers are dealing with right now, they're going to do anything that they can to make people stop and think about their stores.
Whether people actually spend money in those stores is another matter. Analysts are predicting the worst holiday sales since the early 1980s. It's no mystery why more and more people are out of work. Credit is more expensive and harder to get. And with all the uncertainty, many people who have money are reluctant to spend it. Tom Chin follows the retail industry at Telsey Advisory Group. He still expects a busy shopping weekend.
There could be traffic in terms of just people wanting to go out there and look at the bargains, but the willingness to spend that dollar is mitigated by a lot of what's happening in the economy.
And, de Grandpre says, by the expectation that prices could come down even lower.
If you're a consumer and you can't turn on the radio without hearing about how badly the retailers are doing, you know that this is not necessarily the only time they're going to be offering these kind of bargains. If you wait, you'll typically see some better deals.
But if you wait till tomorrow for Black Friday bargains, you could be too late. Thanks to online sales today, de Grandpre says some deals may be sold out before Friday even gets here. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
By the way, about that Black Friday thing, the name comes from marking the point when retailers are supposed to be able to start showing a profit for the year. Financial markets here at home had the day off, but we can give thanks that other global markets picked up where Wall Street left off yesterday and carried on the rally. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Okay, gang, you know what it's time for now.
And what about sweet potatoes?
Yeah, and green beans and stuffing and pumpkin pie, all that good stuff. Those enthusiastic folks you just heard were collecting food for the homeless. It's all part of the Thanksgiving Dinner in the Park, held every year just up the road in Pasadena, California. Union Station Homeless Services has served up all the fixings for several years now. But this year, times are a little tough for everyone. For those who are in need, and for those who are trying to fill the need. I joined Rabbi Marvin Gross this morning at the park. He's the executive director at Union Station, and he told me a little bit about his operation.
This is about the 35th year in a row that we've done our Thanksgiving dinner in the park. Is right behind me, hundreds, maybe even several thousand volunteers checking in and getting ready to serve. We have cooked 200 turkeys for today. And over on the street there, across the park, you can see the curb. There are people who are going to be coming all morning, dropping off turkeys, hams, pies. And it's a great feast and a wonderful community event.
Now, you've been around for a number of years. How big is this compared to previous years?
Well, Bob, this could be the biggest this year. I think, as we all know, the need is pretty great out there in the community. Pasadena is no different from other parts of the country. Last year, in the midst of a pretty good economy, we served 5,000 meals to hungry and homeless people. And this year, you know, it's hard to predict, but a lot of folks are here lining up already, so we could break all records. But fortunately, we have a great outpouring of community support to help us meet this challenge.
Now, Thanksgiving aside, how much of a demand have you seen this year? It's been growing, you say.
The demand is growing. We operate several shelters here in Pasadena with a total of just over 150 beds. We are filled now all the time. Unusually for us, we have a waiting list. The numbers coming to our meal service during the week at breakfast and lunch at our adult shelter, those numbers are growing. And at the same time, to be honest, our resources are decreasing right now. November and December are our two biggest months for income during the year. And we're obviously close to the end of December, and our revenue is down, and it could be pretty serious for us.
And still the demand is there, so how do you manage?
Well, we do the best we can. We're going to all of our friends in the community and asking them to step up. I've been on the phone with a lot of our donors and have been asking them to help us meet the challenge. We remain committed to our mission, but, you know, I can't be deluded myself that things are going to be easy. This is going to be a tough year, but people have big hearts.
Well, that brings me to the obvious question today. As hard as it's been this year, what are you thankful for?
I'm thankful that I have an opportunity to do meaningful work. I'm thankful for my family and friends, for my health that allows me to continue to do this work. And I'm thankful that I'm engaged in an enterprise with a number of other folks who are volunteers, staff people, people on our board, community leaders here who realize that all during the year there are those in need. And we have a problem in this country of a widening income gap. And one day I hope that maybe we can cancel this dinner because everybody can provide for themselves. But in the meantime, we're going to be here doing our best.
Rabbi Marvin Gross is Executive Director of Union Station Homeless Services in Pasadena, California. Thanks very much for giving us your time today.
Bob, it's my pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving.
How about this for something to be thankful for? Wall Street's taking a break, so at least the stock market can't gobble up any more of your investments today. As we've watched our self-worth dwindle away this year, estate planning has taken on a whole new meaning. But if you haven't thought about it, it's probably more important than ever that we now get our affairs in order. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith learned that her parents did so, making sure to leave a little something for her and for some people not yet born.
Here's the deal. I'm 31 years old, I am not married, and I do not have children. So imagine my surprise when my mom calls a few months back to tell me she and dad have set up a generation-skipping trust. Basically, that means they're setting aside a chunk of money that will exclusively be available to my theoretical offspring. Translation? The more I thought about it, the more freaked out I got.
I think it's very natural for you to have that kind of reaction.
That's Eileen Gallo. She's a psychotherapist who specializes in issues of money and inheritance. She says wills and trusts are often very fraught. She advised me to be understanding and try to get more information from my parents.
They want in their lifetime probably to experience grandchildren. And they're giving you the little push. But you might not want to be pushed. You need to be the one to communicate with them.
So I asked my mom for the skinny.
It was set up for your 30th birthday. The idea was to have everything in place by the time you were 30.
Did you think I would already have kids?
Well, you don't know, but you hope.
I'm sorry, Mom. Did I mention I'm an only child? Anyway, Mom said with college tuition prices and housing prices being what they are, it would be a good idea to set aside money for my hypothetical kids.
Did you guys worry at all about the fact that there aren't actual grandchildren yet?
When the trust was set up, the assumption basically was and is that there will be.
Yeah, my parents are not settled people. But personal finance expert Jordan Goodman says, from a financial perspective, they're just being smart.
It is a way of transferring assets without estate tax to your grandkids as well as to you. So, yes, there's a definite tax savings.
Goodman says if my parents just left money to me, it would be taxed 45% when I got it, and it would be taxed 45% again when I gave it to my kids. The trust will sidestep a lot of those taxes. And if I don't have kids, I can leave the money to someone else when I die. I asked Goodman how he would recommend handling a situation like this.
I think you should please them have a kid. That would be the best solution to this entire estate planning problem.
Would that be your advice from a personal finance perspective?
It only takes 9 months. It's really not that big a deal, so you should go for it.
Clearly, my parents got to him first, and this type of parental bribery is driving a whole new category in estate planning. They're called incentive trusts, and basically it means the kids have to jump through certain hoops to get their parents' money. Estate planning lawyer John Gallo says about a quarter of his clients have asked him about incentive plans. He says sometimes getting money is contingent on a college degree, marrying a person of a particular faith, earning a certain amount of money, and it gets a lot weirder.
I'm aware of one incentive trust in which the beneficiary's weight was taken into consideration. If she weighed more than a specified amount, the income from the trust would be cut back because her father was always concerned that she was going to be obese.
Seriously? Is that even legal?
It is legal, and there is a Twinkie trust out there, I can assure you.
Gallo says he's not a huge fan of incentive trusts, but he says that hasn't stopped them from becoming hugely popular.
People tend to create incentive trusts out of fear. It really depends upon what is the particular issue that the parent is facing. Is the parent concerned about drug abuse? Is the parent concerned about the child not being entrepreneurial? It's really an attempt to extend parental authority beyond the grave.
Suddenly, the fact that my parents set up a fund for fictional grandkids doesn't seem so bad. At least it doesn't involve me getting on a scale every month. And anyway, Mom assures me that she and Dad are just trying to make life easier for me.
The idea was to positively affect both your life and your children's lives.
If I have children, right?
Mm-hmm.
Translation. Yeah, where's a Twinkie when you need one? In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Coming up, putting the brakes on bad car deals.
When the business manager walked out of the office, he and the salesperson high-fived each other because the dealership had made $5,000 profit off of this woman. And I just couldn't stand it anymore.
But first, let's do the numbers. Who needs Wall Street to lead the rally when stocks around the world rose to their best level in 2 weeks today? Analysts credit renewed expectations that Washington will bail out American automakers for helping push Germany's DAX and France's CAC 40 almost 2.5% higher. Britain's FTSE closed up almost 2%, likewise Japan's Nikkei index. Meantime, the value of the dollar weakened slightly against several major currencies, and the yield on European bonds briefly slipped to its lowest point since 2005. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship. Online at kauffman.org. Want more from Marketplace's special Fallout coverage? It's all on our website. You'll find special podcasts, videos, and the Marketplace Decoder, a simple guide to financial terms and products. Go to marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. Romania holds its parliamentary elections. At the stroke of midnight, many retailers open their doors and offer deep discounts for Black Friday. And on this day in 1843, England and France officially recognized Hawaii as an independent nation. I'm Caitlin Carroll.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Bob Moon, in for Kai Rizdahl. If you hadn't noticed, we've been following a common theme for this holiday program. Our focus is on generosity. So what does that buy you? We've all heard that money can't buy you love, and a lot of people agree it can't buy happiness. But if you have enough of it, there's a whole lot you can buy, including a chance to change people's minds. Our next story is about branding, about a software millionaire in Denver using his money to try to influence public perception. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson has our tale.
This is the headquarters of a Denver nonprofit called the Latina Initiative, and organizers are training volunteers for a voter registration drive.
So the first question, are you a citizen of the United States?
Across town at the Denver Center for the Performing Arts, artistic director Kent Thompson is planning a season of theatrical productions.
We're kind of the flagship professional theater of the Rocky Mountain region that produces large-scale productions.
And about 70 miles to the south, Rosemary Harris sits in her office at the Colorado Springs chapter of the NAACP.
We adopt schools. We will give complete backpacks of supplies to every student in the fifth grade class this fall.
These organizations all have something in common. They get money from the same funder.
My name is Mary Lou Makepeace, Executive Director of the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado.
Mary Lou Makepeace is the former mayor of Colorado Springs. Now she's helping software mogul Tim Gill, who's gay, give his money away. He founded the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado 12 years ago, and it's already given away $20 million. But it has a novel approach. It funds only non-gay nonprofits.
They have to be a 501c3. They have to provide services in the state of Colorado, and they have to include sexual orientation and gender expression in their personnel policies.
They also have to prominently display the name of their funder, the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado. Here's David Zupancic back at the Performing Arts Center.
Those logos go on everything from the envelope that people get when they walk up to the counter and buy tickets to a banner in the lobby to television advertising.
I even heard the name on the radio.
Colorado Public Radio is supported by the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado. Committed to
now, huge swaths of Colorado would never be described as gay-friendly. Colorado Springs, for instance, is home to several big Christian conservative organizations that openly condemn gays and lesbians. In 1992, Colorado voters passed an amendment preventing the state from specifically protecting gays from discrimination. Tim Gill responded by starting two philanthropies, one to fund gay causes, the other, the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, to gain acceptance for gays among the non-gay community.
People have sometimes been scared of gay, and so by putting it there in all these completely safe places, we kind of make the word innocuous.
You know, in the corporate world, you can buy advertising to change your image. In the philanthropy world, that's not recognized so well, so you can do it through recognition for the grants that you make.
Eileen Heisman runs the National Philanthropic Trust. She says Gill's idea of using philanthropy to change social attitudes is similar to the way corporations with a negative image sponsor Little League to gain favor.
Money can't buy you love, but it can certainly buy you lots of friends.
The grants Tim Gill's organizations make are relatively small. They average less than $10,000, but the fund makes 200 of them a year.
At what point do you feel that your mission has been accomplished?
You know, if at some point gays and lesbians achieve substantial equality in society, then maybe I can start funding nuclear physics research or something, and that would probably be fun too. But for right now, that's where it's going.
In Denver, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
It seems appropriate on this holiday to spotlight a special breed of startup enterprises, social entrepreneurs who use their work to try to fix what might be wrong with the world. A while back, we came across one Robert Chambers. As a man in his 60s, he was old enough to be enjoying a carefree retirement, but still keeping busy. He was tackling a gripe that was left over from his working days and still bugging the heck out of him, and he swore he was going to fix it. Reporter Steve Tripoli put together this report from the Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk.
Robert Chambers' post-retirement career was born at a New Hampshire car dealership a while back. He was working there one morning when the sales force was called together. A $1,000 bonus was offered to anyone who could sell an older car with 70,000 miles on it. Shortly after that, a young woman walked in, a single mother earning $11 an hour. The salesman steered her to the bonus car. She bit on a high price, but then was told there'd be a problem getting financing. Chambers picks up the story.
She had gone through a divorce and had ended up with some credit issues, so she was financed at a very high interest rate, and she was sold a very expensive warranty on the car. And when she drove off, this car was financed over a five-year period of time, which is typical, but I knew that that car would be dead in 3 years or would have significant mechanical problems. And when the business manager walked out of the office, he and the salesperson high-fived each other because the dealership had made $5,000 profit off of this woman, and I just couldn't stand it anymore.
Chambers says unsophisticated working people get shafted on used cars all the time. What irks him even more is that they can often get new cars for the same overall cost, but no one tells them that's possible. So Chambers chose not to retire after leaving car sales, even though he was well set from owning several businesses. Instead, he channeled his frustrations into cooking up a new business called Bonnie Clack. Clack stands for Car Loans and Counseling. It gives lower-income people two things they rarely get on big purchases, the bargaining clout of a group plus a heavy dose of guidance.
Do you know what was the interest rate on your car loan before when you purchased your Toyota?
At one of Bonnie Clack's seven New Hampshire offices, Counselor Verdina Mekic runs a mandatory financial literacy course for clients. On this day, she's educating a young couple about the hidden ways car costs add up.
If you have, let's say, 10-year-old car that constantly needs repairs, the average repair would be $140 a month. This $140 a month...
The couple shoot each other knowing glances. They've already been burned by repairs on their clunker. Robert Chambers learned long ago that lousy car deals can sabotage a struggling family's shot at getting ahead. Workers can't get to work when old cars fail, so they're losing pay at the same time they need repair money. That triggers other financial pressures.
It's a kind of a circular trap that they can't get out of, and they can't go to buy the new car because they don't have the credit, and also because they're never introduced to that new car because the dealership doesn't make enough profit.
But a good car can reverse that cycle. So Bonnie Clack brokers the purchase price, loan, and extended warranty on clients' cars. It also insists on high-mileage vehicles. Best of all, it struck a deal with a regional bank so clients with less than pristine credit can get low-cost financing. Bonnie Clack clients get prime interest rates, and Chambers brags that losses from these supposedly risky loans have been microscopic.
Our success rate is better than commercial lending. On a portfolio of $10 million with 985 clients, we've lost $46,000.
It turns out Robert Chambers isn't just some wacky oddity among could-be retirees. A San Francisco-based nonprofit called Civic Ventures recently made him a finalist for its Purpose Prize. It rewards social entrepreneurship by people over 60. Civic Ventures head Mark Friedman says many retiring baby boomers are itching to make a difference, just like Robert Chambers did, and now they have the means.
This generation is better educated, they have more financial resources, they have a longer life expectancy, and I think that they have higher expectations about what's possible in this stage of life, and many of those expectations are focused on the greater good.
Friedman expected a few dozen nominees for last year's first Purpose Prizes. More than 1,200 stories about social entrepreneurs over 60 rolled in. Back in New Hampshire, Robert Chambers is just warming up. He'll start expanding Bonnie Clack across New England in January. If that works, a large foundation has promised to help him go national. So at 63, Chambers says he's having too much fun to retire and making too much of a difference. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering more of what you want in a retirement plan. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
And as final note, maybe you climbed aboard a packed airliner to get to where you are this Thanksgiving holiday. And maybe you thought to yourself, gee, maybe business isn't so bad for the airlines after all. Well, guess again. Remember, when high fuel prices put them on the ropes, they cut back the number of flights to fly at full capacity. And just today, the International Air Transport Association, the industry's global trade group, is warning anew that actual passenger traffic is still down. It isn't declining quite as fast as it had been, but cargo traffic shows no sign of bottoming out. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. The markets were closed for the Thanksgiving holiday. Stephen Gregory, John Haas, Patty Hirsch, Betsy Streisand, and Lisa Tucker are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is George Judson. Next time on the program, gray skylines create green jobs in L.A.
We definitely need to be on the forefront of new technologies because that will be a tremendous amount of work in the future.
I'm Bob Moon. Hope you can digest all that tomorrow. Happy Thanksgiving.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.